Hello. It is Monday, March 4th, 2019, and thank you for joining the Vinnie Marino podcast show. I'm Vinnie, and by my side, I have Jason. Jason's going to be co-hosting with me tonight.
Hello, hello, hello.
Say hello, Jason.
Hello.
So, hold on a second. I'm drinking this Greenwise orange organic seltzer water flavored. How the hell do I know it's organic? What makes it organic versus regular seltzer? But they charge extra, so it must mean something. So it's all right. It's not bad.
You like spending money.
And it's I only bought it because it was buy one, get one, or I wouldn't have bought it because I wouldn't pay the extra penny. So tonight's show, we're going to have a really interesting show tonight. It's really dear to a lot of people. I promised we're going to have like crazy antics and all kinds of nonsense going on this show. I guarantee you that. Topics that'll just make you laugh and bellyache. So, but tonight, you know, I got a special guest, a couple special guests tonight, and we're going to be talking about post-traumatic stress and suicide awareness in the first responders, and it also reaches out to many other facets in the world, you know, people in different careers and, you know, everyday people. So that'll be coming up here in a few minutes. Current event, I hear, Jason, that Luke Perry died today.
52 years young.
Had a massive stroke. Wow. I forgot all about the guy. When I said Luke Perry, I thought it was a singer.
You know, the funny thing is they were going to reboot that 90210 with the original cast.
Wow.
So that definitely throws a monkey wrench.
I can tell you this. I've never watched it. I've never watched the show.
Come on, man.
I've
Everybody
never watched that or Cheers or...
What?
My brother's a huge fan of the... what's the guy? What's that show? King of Queens. And I love watching his little tapes. He's still got videotapes of them, and he'll show me certain episodes that are pretty fun.
Kevin James. Yep. That's the guy. Kevin James.
Yep. Kevin James. So tonight we're going to have Doug Monda and his wife Karen Monda. They're here tonight for our main topic. But I'd mentioned something to Jason prior to the show starting.
This has to be the craziest thing I've ever heard about Vinnie Marino. Tell the people why you were on Wheel of Fortune. How in God's name did you get on Wheel of Fortune?
Well, it's a true story. I was in 1997. They were coming to the area. I lived in Palm Beach County. And
Wait, so in 97, you were what, 51?
52? I think I was like 16.
Okay, just check.
So they were taking auditions. So at the time, I was dating a girl who...
Shocker.
who wanted to put in for it. So I was like, all right, cool. So she put me in for it. I think it was like unbeknownst to me. After she put me in, I realized that I got a letter saying that I was accepted. She didn't. So she initiated and I got selected for an audition. So I basically went up to a resort in Palm Beach, North Palm Beach, and it was at a hotel in a big room. And they had like two auditions. They had the morning group and the afternoon. I was in the morning group and it was about 65 people. For the morning and like 65 in the afternoon auditions. Now, mind you, there was about 20-something thousand people that entered. So I believe that when they picked me, I don't think it was random, but I think it was just what they do is they pick so many applicants out of a barrel and then weed those out.
Maybe so, they picked you by height.
Yeah. Yeah.
they felt sorry for you.
Yeah.
Oh, he's height.
Hey, I'm average height in Mexico. I could be an NBA star in Mexico or Guatemala. So
at center, yeah. Vinny Chacha Marino. Yeah.
So basically, I went there for an audition, and they did some like mock wheel spins and mock, you know, get up and say something, shout out something. And then they did a like a little puzzle. So each person had a puzzle that was opposite of you, so you couldn't cheat. So because I always try to cheat. So the guy next to me, and it was like easy stuff like, F blank X T blank blank T. So you fill in the rest. Foxtrot. So it was like 20 questions. They give you 5 minutes to do it. So basically, the guy next to me, I got maybe, I don't know, maybe 4 out of 20. And the guy next to me, he was like a freaking engineer. He zinged them all. So I said, holy shit, dude, you're going to get picked. So they sent us on a recess. We come back and they said, all right, we want to thank everybody that came out, but we're only going to keep like 15 of you. So all the smart people left. They kept all the dumb people like me who were not dumb
because they don't want you to win the money.
right. Well, I wasn't dumb, but I wasn't dumb. So they kept me, and we did a more in-depth interview. We did some photographs. We played a mock game. Then they said, hey, tell you what, in 13 days, thanks for coming. If you don't receive a letter, then thanks for trying out. You know, we'll try next time. So on the 13th day, I opened my mailbox, and holy shit, I got a letter from him. I was like, Jesus H. Christ. So I immediately called him right then, and I called him up, and they said, hey, you know, thanks. You know, we're selecting you as a show for a show. Can you come out here next week? I said, damn, I'm all the way in Florida, and this is all the way in Culver City, California. So I said, hey, at the time I was working for the sheriff's office down in Palm Beach, and I said, let me see. So I called my boss, and I said, yeah, we'll guarantee you a leave. So I said, okay. So I had to pay for a plane flight. It was $373. I flew out there. I had a cousin who lives in Los Angeles, so I shacked up with her, and then I went to the studio the next day. And I mean, it's trust me, it was not fun. It was stressful. They sequester you as soon as you get there. They put you with a bunch of other people, and they feed you. They do makeup. They do everything. They take you out to the actual studio, and you actually spin the big wheel. And
now Vinny and makeup would be interesting.
Well, they did. They had to shine my head. So basically, if you ever notice on Wheel of Fortune, everybody's the same height because they have like elevators on the cubes where you stand. So if you're 5'2", you could be, if the tallest guy's 6', you're now going to be 6'. So they raise everybody to the height that is equal. So then, like, people ask, did you meet Vanna White? Did you meet Pat Sajak? Absolutely not. Nope. I met Pat Sajak on the way out to the studio, to the game, actual game show.
Right.
And it was 22 minutes. So basically, you know, long story short, I sucked at the game. I played good at home. But when I played there, I did good. I spun the wheel good. I had one hand. I had like $17,200 in front of me. I hit the 10,000 little space. And I called an F because I did it out of frustration. I was so scared. So I lost it, and I gave everything to the – I was in the middle position where I wanted to be, and I didn't do me any good. So basically, I walked out of there with absolutely nothing. And that's the time Vanna White was pregnant. So they said, hey – they took me to the consolation room, and they go, hey – we got a consolation prize for you. How about a
year's supply of turtle wax?
No, well, that came too. All the X-Lax and everything else, you know, vitamins and water softeners and stuff. So they said, hey, do you want to stay and watch the show? I said, nope, I'd rather not. And now my cousin dropped me off. So I don't even, I mean, I had nobody there. I'm in the streets of Culver City, California, and it's rough. So I said, man. So they said, well, how about a consolation prize? I said, all right, what do you got? They said, well, we got a gym membership for World Gym. I said, nah, don't need it. I got a gym membership. They said, all right, how about a tea set valued at $800? I said, nope, don't want that. I said, I don't want anything. So they said, how about a five-piece luggage set valued at $800-something? I said, holy shit, I'll take that. That's not bad.
Yeah. That's
so bad. I got my luggage, and then...
Wait, do you still have it?
No, it was crap.
He sold it on eBay.
It was crap. Yeah. It was crap. So basically, when everybody found out that I lost everything, because I called my family on the phone out from a payphone. That's when they had payphones. And they all asked me, did you win? I said, nope. And they said, and my dad says, what do you mean you didn't win? Everybody wins on that show. I said, nope, not me. So when I came back into town, the local news station did an article on me, and I was harassed. So I think, Doug, this is where my post-traumatic stress arises, because the newspaper did an interview.
I highly, highly doubt it.
Pregnant Vanna White.
Well, the news article started, wheels fall off on deputy. the F didn't stand for fortune, because I called an F and lost all my money.
Failure.
Yeah, so, you know, they said that it basically screwed me. It put me in the hole for $373 for a flight. Then it put me in a hole because then I got, after I thought it was the dust had settled, then I get a 1099 from the government for the goddamn luggage they sent me, so I had to file my taxes on that. So that's how that damn episode worked. And that was, and I, you know, God. What? Since 1997, I've never watched that show again, ever. Ever. Refused to watch it.
I'm still amazed you never watched Cheers.
No.
Like, that was a staple.
No, I watched Good Times.
That was a staple in my life.
I grew up with Good Times, The Jeffersons.
What's Happening? Mm. That was a good one.
Yeah, I liked that show. That was
Raj Run.
Yep.
Raj and Rerun.
And then cartoons, you know, Looney Tunes, Fat Albert. Mm.
You can't play those anymore.
He didn't watch Cheers because that was like in your 21-year-old age.
Yeah, you know what, Doug, I never really even got into that, man. I can't remember why. Even King of Queens. And then what's the other guy named? Seinfeld. Never got into that.
Oh, dude, Seinfeld.
I've never been addicted to anything. Not, I mean, not like TV shows and stuff, but other things, yeah. But not like
me either. I'm not into that.
Yeah, TV I don't get into series. And I've been trying to watch this new show, The Manifest. I've recorded it, and I never watch it. I was like, what the hell am I recording?
Listen, man, I watch The Real Housewives. I get roped into all that stuff with my wife. We enjoy it. The funny part is I could probably name most of those people on that show.
Yeah, there's your man card right off the door.
There's my man card.
Yeah. So that's just the morning. Morning thing. That's just an evening rant that we're just bullshitting about. But we're gonna get more serious here in a second. And so that was my experience with Wheel of Fortune. And when I had mentioned that to Jason, he was like, "Holy crap! I had no idea." And a lot of people don't know that I was on Wheel of Fortune.
Now they do.
Yeah, and I think we wanted to try out. I wanted to get my family on Family Feud. I think that's a. Yeah, that's probably the funnest
show.
I
would love to see your brother Steve on Family Feud.
Yeah, he'd be the ringleader. So, all right. So let's get our game faces on here. And I want to thank Jason for being here with me. Jason is a local resident, and he's an awesome friend. I met Jason. I think Jason was going to say how we met.
Well, actually, how we met, because I'm a realtor, and I had a listing, and your ex-wife came to that listing and actually purchased the house. And when we were there one day, you came in with one of the police dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to meet the police dogs and stuff because they were doing a little rehab, I believe.
Yep.
We were doing rehab with the puppy at the time. And but that's my first experience meeting Vinny. And then the next time I meet Vinny is at our Bible study.
Yeah, I do go to Bible study. I've been missing a little bit, sort of like the gym. Once you're in it, you're in it. When you miss a day or two, it's a struggle to get back in. But I did go last week. I did turn down a dart engagement at the local tailgaters bar and to shoot some darts. And I came in for our men's group, and it's great, great experience. That also is another thing that touches on with the topic tonight.
Yeah.
And it helps out with Jason's life struggles, and we all have struggles. And if anybody says they have the Brady Bunch lifestyle, they're
liar,
full of crap.
Liar,
yeah.
There's no
freaking way. Nobody's like, there's no, I don't care how happy people look and appear to be. There's demons in all of us. And it might not be, you know, certain types of demons. Some are worse than others. And it's how we deal with our issues. So let me just start introducing our host, our guest. I'm sorry. I'm the host. God dang it.
Hey, but Vinny, it's your show.
Yeah. So anyway, going back real quick, we're not going to have any scripts. This is not a scripted show. We're not robotic. We're not going to be talking off ledgers. We're not going to be, you know, reading scripts. I mean, I do jot down some notes because
you're old.
Yeah, I'm old.
Memory,
and I have
memory,
you know,
issues.
I have ADHD. I have like the alphabet. I have ADHD, PTSD, RMB. I got everything, man. I got all the letters.
STD.
So, no. Yeah, I almost agreed to that one for a second.
Almost fell for it, Vinny.
So I'm going to get serious. I'm going to put on my old man glasses. So
mine stay on permanently.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell you who we got here tonight, and then I'm going to let them take a little bit, and then we're going to Q&A. And if anybody's listening, I appreciate everybody that's listening from far and near. You can comment. And I have a moderator here that will review your questions, and you can say it anything you want. It doesn't know. He's not monitoring the content of language, so go ahead and say what you want. If you want to throw out a topic that you want us to talk about, bring it up. We got all kinds of years of experience sitting right here today, so in all different facets of life, and we've been through it all. I'm telling you, if you ain't getting an answer from this group, this panel, it ain't done. Forget the psychologists because they go by books. We go by experience.
Street
life, baby.
Life in general.
So let me introduce. We have with us right now is Doug Monda. He's a 17-year Coco police officer that he retired. He was on the SWAT team. He was also a Blackwater sniper. He's done numerous, I think his entire life, he's done numerous triathlons. He's in my opinion, like I said before, he's an Iron Man. This guy is an amazing. He's got an amazing character. He's a cop's cop. He's a friend to all. And anybody that needs help, I mean, he's not the one that you feel afraid to approach, because he'll talk to anybody, and he has a lot of knowledge, because this man, my friend, has been through it all. And I don't want us to have somebody that's going to come on here and talk about theories and statistics and stuff. I mean, I will talk about some just to collaborate. But who knows best is somebody who's been through it and who can tell you the best. And that's Doug Monda, in my opinion. And he's the founder of Survive First. It's a foundation that discusses the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. And they dabble a little bit, which goes hand-in-hand, because when you have that and it's untreated and it's unrecognized, it tends to turn into suicide. And that's a huge problem. So I appreciate everybody to listen in and don't think like, that's something. Because you know what? Things that he touches on, and you don't have to be a cop. You could be a maintenance guy. Yeah,
it could be anybody.
Anybody. And you could witness something that is shocking that after you witness it and then you start feeling angry and, you know, there's a lot of symptoms that will rattle off. And if you fall into any of that, that's maybe what you're suffering from. Also, next to Doug is going to be Karen Monda. And yes, they are married, and she is also an athlete. She is does marathons, and I think she mentioned to me before the show that she's going into triathlon. She's in great shape. She's an amazing wife to Doug. They're a great couple. They do all the exercising and running together. And I think sometimes, I don't know if Doug follows on a bicycle. Did I ever see that before?
I can't keep up with her.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, at least you guys are getting in shape. My shape is just round.
That is a shape. But that chair does fit you well.
Well, yes, it is hugging my lower region pretty comfortably.
You're not going to worry about falling out, let's say that. So, all right, without further ado, let me turn it over to Doug. And, Doug, you go ahead and just reiterate what I said to you or talked about you, and tell me a little about your foundation, how it got started, where you're at today, and anything that you can provide to the listeners, advice, and the things that you do when you go to these seminars and you go to classes or police agencies all over the United States. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to Doug Monda.
Hey, all right.
All right.
Welcome, brother. Welcome.
See, they like me, babe. Thank you, man.
We love Doug.
I'm honored to be here, man. Thank you for letting me be the first guest on your show, too.
That's absolutely
incredible, man. But I get you. You're a cop's cop, too. You care more about everybody else than you do yourself, and that's pretty amazing.
So amen.
I'm honored to be here. I can't stop looking at your friends on your Facebook, like the comments. Yeah, I don't know if y'all checked them out, but some of them are pretty funny.
Oh, I like the one from Nick Vitani. Hello from Turkey.
I think Ned said he's a turkey.
Nick said I have PTSD from my cats. Well, listen, brother, so do I, because my wife is a crazy cat person.
Cats are the best.
No. Oh, my God. I can't see. I actually cannot see the comments. So if you see anything stupid or funny, just let us know, because that's what we're all about, man. But we're going to talk serious here.
Yeah.
And we're gonna definitely talk serious, because this is a serious topic. So, but Doug, you know how we roll, man. We're unscripted. So whatever you want to say, please, you know, anybody that's listening is afraid of, you know, the four-letter word, and that's not love. It's fuck. So if you're afraid of that word, don't listen, because, well, listen, but just we'll beep it out. When it happens, beep.
It comes. No beep.
All right, Doug, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
I appreciate it. I'm a pretty unscripted guy.
That's how we like it.
Anybody who knows me knows I just say how it is. First of all, you made a comment about, you know, for people to listen anyway. And that's a big deal, because, you know, a lot of people go, oh, I got nothing wrong with me. But you know what? Somebody in your house might have it. And I experienced that one of my first times speaking. I think I was in Seattle, somewhere in Washington. And when you're on stage, like, you notice everything. It's pretty weird, you know. Oh. You see everybody out there giving you the dirty look, and people, like, you know, falling asleep. And this kid, he was a deputy. He must have been on duty. And he gets up and he leaves. And I'm like, oh man, this sucks, man. Like, I'm not touching these people. Anyway, this kid, he comes back, and what he did when he was listening to what I was saying, he recognized the symptoms in his zone partner. So he goes and gets his zone partner, brings him back, says, hey, you need to listen to this, because he came on duty.
Wow, that's huge.
And you know what's crazy? The kid told the people when he came back there, he goes, yeah, I was going to kill myself tonight. Oh. And that was my very first time speaking, and that's when I realized, okay, I mean, everybody needs to hear this.
And you can make a difference. I mean, you know.
I've always had this saying, I wish I just had 5 minutes of his time. And that happened to me, too. So between, I had two suicide bouts, attempts. And between the first and the second one.
Now you're talking about on yourself.
On myself.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll get into that. There was a young kid from Palm Bay, just started at Palm Bay PD. His name was Matt. And he moved into my neighborhood. I lived in a neighborhood called Snug Harbor in South Cocoa Beach. Mm-hmm. And you come in and you either have to make, it's like a Y.
Right. Yep.
So you got to make a right or a left. And I lived all the way to the left on the river, and his parents lived in the dead center of the Y. So I had to pass his house every day when I went home, but I was in my own depression. And every time I drove by, I would always, and that's this kind of person, if I see a cop on the side of the road, I don't care, I stop, or right. at least give him the thumbs up. So I see the kid, and he would be playing outside with his canine. He had a shepherd. And I kept saying, man, I need to stop and see this kid. Just introduce. Hey, man, you know, if you need anything, you got any questions, come say hi,
yeah,
right?
You guys,
my neighbor now.
Listen, man, all you cops are, you guys are a brotherhood.
Right. Well, we would hope.
You would hope, yeah.
So anyway, I never did it. And then shortly after that, he came home from work one day, man, and walked through the house into the backyard and shot himself.
Oof.
And it sent me into a spiral. It really probably impacted my second suicide attempt because I felt like it was my fault. Because I had had experience in it, and I just said, man, if I would have gave this kid just 5 minutes of my time, I could have saved his life.
That goes around a lot. I mean, a lot of times these symptoms are recognized, but people who don't have them don't know how to recognize them and don't know how to deal with it, and they'll just push them off. You know, hey, go cool off. You know, and there's times when if you just, like you said, give somebody that 5 minutes of time.
Random act of kindness, a smile. I mean, you know, a random act of kindness saved my life one night, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, I had several nights or days, you know, where I was like, okay, I'm just going to go home today. I'm going to shoot myself. And little things always kept me from doing it. And they were usually a little random act of kindness, you know.
Did you ever have anybody to intervene with you? I mean, how close were you to actually taking your own life?
Well, for the longest time, it was like almost every day.
Yeah.
But one time, I make a long story short, we can get into that later. I did. I put the gun in my head, pulled the trigger, and it was quite an experience. Obviously it didn't work or I wouldn't be sitting here
right, yeah.
talking about it. But there were some people who tried to intervene. Karen actually knows more about for whatever reason, I've had some issues. I don't know if it's traumatic brain issues or you know, this summer I was real sick. I had a couple little mini strokes, but I have a hard time remembering certain things. But there was some intervening, mostly mm-hmm. with my SWAT team guys at work. They were, you know, they cared, and at first it didn't sink in, but you know, later. And then my first bout, I didn't know Karen. I met Karen literally like a week before I got put in a cuckoo house.
A few months.
So I joke about that for myself,
yeah.
you know, not to make fun of anybody else, but that's how I have to handle
yep.
it, you know,
yep.
because just, I'm such a, you know, I spend 90% of my day bettering mm-hmm. myself physically, you know, to do the triathlon, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it affects me to know that I let myself
right.
get to that point, you know.
So, Doug, tell me the role that Karen does at the Survive First Foundation, the roles that you do, where it takes you to in the country, and what you do when you go to these police agencies, and are you making a difference in agencies to recognize officers that deal with, like we discussed, you know, the type of post-traumatic stress that law enforcement suffers from is different than military.
Absolutely.
And because, you know, law enforcement, they experience it sometimes on a daily basis. I mean, we've both been cops, and I mean, I've seen, you know, people blow their brains out in front of me. I've seen, you know, I was involved in two lines of duty deaths. I was involved in a dive team where I pulled out, the most recent was maybe 2 years ago. I pulled out I think it was a 6 or 7 year old child from a canal, and that was a huge scene. That was a major scene, and that one struck home really hard because I have a child, and that kind of like rocked me. And basically, when you suffer from these incidents, I suffer from it. With I have memory loss. I'm telling you, I can't remember certain things for the life of me. Still today, I still can't remember a lot of things. But nobody, they gave us maybe 15 minutes and said, hey, if you need anything, let us know. And they actually had counselors come in after that dive call where I pulled that kid out. And they had the office had these critical incident people. And these were people that were, you know, average people that worked with us. And maybe I don't like them. Yeah. You know, so they're having somebody talk to me that I really don't care about.
That's you and everybody else.
Yeah.
That's
so I really didn't benefit from anything. So I basically just buried it, and then I wonder why that there's times that I'm angry. You know, I've seen one of the symptoms is, you know, teeth grinding. I grind my teeth, you know. I, for no reason, I just get emotional. For no reason, just nothing. You know, and I just, at those times, I look to somebody to vent with. So
that's why you call me.
Yeah, that's why Jason has done me a lot of good, man. He's a good friend, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, somebody that has issues or personal issues, you know, Jason's the kind of guy that is there for you. But so your guys, you travel to where and how many different agencies have you been to? Or do you go to a regular place? Do you have a home base? Can you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll fill you in. So Karen does everything. I'm just the face. I'm just the guy who pulled the trigger on himself and lived to tell the story.
It sounds like a real marriage.
Yeah, it's perfect, man. So she does it all. Look at her now. Look, she's just sitting there smiling.
He's retired, right? Though. He does laundry and dishes.
House
and,
bitch.
Yeah.
That's my nickname, yep. House bitch.
Honeydew.
Like, I tell people, like, man, I was like, you know, I went from being pretty much a street thug, yeah, man, government assassin to house bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But so I don't mind it.
Yeah, Karen, what is your role? I mean, how big of a part do you play in this? I know he says you do everything, but we don't know what everything is.
Well, basically, I handle everything behind the scenes. I am our director of communication, so I connect with agencies and departments when they want to have us come for any educational programs or anything else like that, and just kind of run everything behind the scenes.
Okay.
When there's a first responder who needs help, the call comes to Doug, and he answers it, or if it's a chief that calls.
And I'm assuming these calls are any time of the day, night, yep, whenever.
Oh my, I live on my phone.
Okay.
Anytime.
Thank God.
And they go to Doug. So I pretty much handle all the communications, everything behind the scenes. And then my big push is really getting out there for the spouses and the significant others, because when we are dealing with a first responder who is either suffering from PTSD or depression, anxiety, which just depression and anxiety alone are huge in first responders. Mm-hmm. They do not have to have PTSD in order to suffer from depression and anxiety. But when we do have, when we're dealing with this, many times the spouses don't know the signs and symptoms. They don't know how to deal with it. Anger is a very big symptom that we come across. But as you can imagine, when you're in a marriage and all of a sudden there's this anger portrayed, it's very easy to sit back and just get mad. Well, why are you treating me?
And it winds up in a divorce.
Way?
And that's the remedy. You divorce, you know.
And we went through our own stuff. I mean, you know, we experienced all of this firsthand. I just kind of I had no support. I just dove myself into researching. As Doug said, we met just not really a week before, but
before
his second suicide attempt where he went away to treatment.
Wow.
But here's my thought. My thought is how awesome of a woman you are to stick it out because you love this guy so much. I think that's the most important thing is the love.
After I came home, I put her through a living hell for about a year or more than a year. Or it's still probably going on now.
No.
I mean, there was, because when I came home, I didn't want to kill myself anymore. But I had, you know, this is part of the story why we formed this. I didn't have aftercare. I didn't have the proper care. I didn't have continuing education, and I didn't really have a support circle at the time. So my life became drinking, raising holy hell, never come. And so Karen would call me every morning. Hey, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Why? Well, your car's in the front yard, not the driveway. That type of stuff.
Right.
And so anyway, you know, she, yeah, that's how awesome she is.
Well, I, you know, I was just going to say, you know, we actually met 3 or 4 months before he went away to treatment. And so when he went,
sorry, our afternoon or evening train is coming by.
Yeah. I didn't know if people could hear like that through the mic. It sounds like it's about to come through the building.
Game off. The car coming. Game off. Game on.
When he did go away to treatment, I had two choices. Here I was just in this new relationship, and you had just fallen in love, but I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, you know, I didn't know anything about the first responder life, certainly nothing about mental health and suicide. And so I had two choices. I could either run for the hills or I could dive into it and research and learn on my own. And that's what I did. And through everything we went through, I started to realize this is huge. Family and spouses need the same amount of support so that they can support their first responder, mm-hmm. Even before it gets to a critical level of PTSD or severe depression or anxiety. And so that's kind of my baby with the whole thing, really right. Supporting the spouse.
So, Doug, do you have you spoken to a lot of the local agencies here in our county? And what kind of are they receptive over this? Are they, you know, we talked about it before, you know, the problem with PTSD or some kind of anomaly with an officer or a first responder, they don't want to go up to the, you know, the top of the command and mention, you know, because then they're going to think they're a wimp or they're, you know, what's been tended to they would pass down is, hey, tough it out, you know, don't worry about it, it's nothing, it's normal. And so it basically stops young officers to approach administration, because then they're going to think maybe their job's in jeopardy if they start complaining that maybe there's an issue. And I know going over to where I think it became really public is at what was that place? The Pulse shooting, mm-hmm. where that one police officer out of all those hunks and studs and, you know, the SWAT teams and everybody else kicking doors and, you know, stepping on people. And it was like a war scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't believe that only one person, one out of all those officers that were there, and in the heat of the moment in a shootout where there was just shots fired, and that's so traumatic, because usually cops only hear their guns fire when they have at the range, you know? So the sound of it alone is just, it's like, wow, it's so surreal. And for one guy to be vocal, to speak about it, and then they shun him like he's, you know, like he's a wimp and suck it up and they laugh about it. So let me think. Hold on. Am I being cued for a commercial? Let me see here. We are going to take a couple minute break real quick to let our sponsors pay tribute to our Space Coast podcast. So please don't go anywhere. We got much more to discuss. So come on back to Vinny Marino Podcast Show.
Steven?
Why, yes, Christopher.
What are you doing?
I am scribing down some ideas for the next podcast of the Black Dog Confessional.
Oh, Mitzi had spoke of that. She said it is rather wonderful.
Well, you know, we tried to succeed, Christopher. We tried to succeed. We're talking about all the proper etiquette techniques that we can this week.
Do you think everyone is listening?
I definitely believe so, Christopher.
Well, if they're not, they better get on their game!
All right, in the studio, breaking news. This guy literally just broke down the door. He's got incredible news. His name is John Adams with The Fix Therapy. John, what's so important? What's going on?
Well, we've got some exciting stuff to talk about.
Well, tell me, what do you have to share?
Well, I've got a brand new podcast coming to you called The Live Life Aware, where we're going to be discussing all kinds of fun topics like biohacking.
Whoa.
Yes. We're going to be talking about integrated medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about some really new hot topics in Florida with medical marijuana and CBD.
I see. Well, that sounds exciting. So what else can the listener expect?
Well, fun facts of the body. Did you know that one red blood cell carries 1 billion oxygen molecules?
That's a lot. I had no idea.
Yeah,
so
if you looked up into the night sky,
right,
you could take every little star and put them on one red blood cell.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. So all kinds of trivia, surprise guests, and things that you're not going to hear about just hanging out in your family practitioner's doctor's office.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about all the stuff you're not listening or hearing from maybe your general practitioner.
Amazing. All right. Thanks so much, John. Live Life Aware, guys, coming soon from the Space Coast Podcast Studios.
You're listening to Space Coast Podcast, home of the greatest podcasts on the Space Coast. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor or having your own show, email us at spacecoastpodcast@hotmail.com.
Space Coast Podcast. Talk hard.
Hello, welcome back to the Vinny Marino Podcast Show. We've been talking about post-traumatic stress and the first responders and whoever it relates to. It could relate to anybody. As always, we have Doug and Karen Monda with Survive First Foundation. So if you're just tuning in, we've been discussing the signs and symptoms of post-traumatic stress. We're going to indulge a little bit more into that. And I know we got some questions on the screen. I can't see the screen.
Well, I got you, Vinny. That's why I'm co-hosting here. So
yeah.
I guess one of the questions was, Doug, do you still suffer? Are you still struggling on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's something that never goes away. It's, you know, you just got to continually, you know, care. You got to be on top of things. I have moments, you know, certain things, triggers that trigger it off. I have like a lot of issues.
Well, what triggers it? So
for me, I have issues being around children. That's part of the story. Is, you know, I had an adopted son. I lost through the whole ordeal over this, and crowds, certain smells, like the craziest little things can go down, but. You know, Karen is like, she's on me 24 hours a day. She sees a lot of, you know, she sees my body tone and my reactions, and she's constantly like redirecting me but it's something you have to live with every day, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I get triggered by, certain triggers for me is when I'm a person, people person. I like to be around people. So I'm kind of opposite. I like to be in crowds, groups. When I'm alone, I start to tend to rehash a lot of things because I had a huge, I think what sent me over the top totally was in 2011 or 12, I had an on-duty death in Cocoa, and at the same time I was going through a divorce and my mother was dying in hospice. So you don't, it doesn't have to be a traumatic experience so far as like you killed somebody or you know, you witnessed something. I mean, just the fact of, you know, witnessing your parent die, or, you know, something that happens to you that doesn't have to be so violent, but it's just something that, you know, a car crash, you know, people witness a car crash and then they can be affected by it. Not everybody. We're all wired differently. You know, some things affect certain people certain ways and some don't. But, so we were getting into and Karen, I didn't mean, I knew you were getting ready to jump on and say something, so go right ahead. But like I said, I deal with it in a certain way. I mean, I just try to stay focused and stay positive. One of my releases is what I'm doing right now today, is doing a podcast. And if this show reaches to somebody, one person, half a person, me, Jason, anybody, you know, because Jason's had a colorful lifestyle himself, growing up, and I feel accomplished. So I mean, we'll have, you know, the Monda's on, you know, we'll try to get them on a regular basis and when they can, and we'll keep hashing it out. We'll take phone calls, we'll take Facebook requests and everything else. But Karen, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off before just a second ago.
Oh, that's okay. Well, first I wanted to thank you for having us on the show as your first guest. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I mean,
I wanted to add to what Doug was saying about how he still deals with it daily. He does. However, there has been healing. And I think the big difference is that he has learned to process what it was that caused his PTSD, his depression, and he got the tools to deal with it. And we together as a family, you know, learned how to work through it together. So though, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but though you still struggle with some things here and there, life is much better for you. Life gets better.
No, life's, yeah, absolutely.
I was going to hear
life. He said no, and I got worried. Yeah. But
you know what? You know what, Karen, let me tell you this. Another thing that kind of triggered me, and I guarantee it happened to Doug. I don't even know this yet, but this is the first damn time bringing it up, is I could not wait to retire. I could not can't wait to get this goddamn uniform off and the back issues and everything else that comes with it and the politics and... And then as the day grew near, I started getting anxiety, mm-hmm. you know. And then it came closer and closer, and I realized, I'm like, holy shit, it's going to be done. Then I'm going to be one of those has-beens who were come up to me and go, hey, I was a cop before. And I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. Yeah, I was 1975. I was a cop. I'm like, oh, geez, I got to hear these stories. And now I'm one of those guys. Now I don't have a purpose. I mean, honestly, I used to have a purpose every day. I used to get up, go to work. I don't know how my life functioned going to work, because I got all kinds of shit to do every day now. It's like I take care of a dad who stresses me out. But, I mean, I was so looking forward to retirement, and then when I retired, it was almost depressing. I mean, that's why a lot of people return back to law enforcement.
Well, and, you know, they're...
Hell no.
No, I wouldn't let you return to law enforcement.
Yeah, well, it's a whole different ballgame right now. Now you got the RoboCops, the robotic kind of people, and then you had the old school, the old mentality of cops are fading away. You know, the real cops who are real cops and real people knew how to talk to people, and now the new cops, they're born on computers. They have no communication skills. But that's another topic we can get on one other day, because that's another stress aware right there, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, he stressed me out.
God dang. No breaks anymore. You know, now it's like, oh, license registration, here's your ticket. It's like, holy crap. Yeah, they don't – there's no personal cops anymore. I mean – there's rookies training rookies now, so.
Well, I think what you brought up about you retiring, mm-hmm. that's such an important topic to discuss, because I think the same thing has happened a little bit with Doug. When he retired, I had a surgery and I was home for a long time, and then I went back to work. But this year has been a little bit different because he spends a lot of time by himself. So that identity thing has kind of sunk in. And many times when we think of first responders, and unfortunately the suicides that we hear about, mm-hmm. we hear about the suicides that are occurring in law enforcement officers and firefighters who are active. Right. But you also, there have been suicides with first responders post-retirement, and many
just don't hear about it. They don't document it.
Yeah, and that's something. You know, the federal government's not mandated to report these. So if they do not report, and that's why nobody's aware of the urgency of why this needs to be recognized, because so many cops are killing themselves and it doesn't get reported.
But Doug was saying before we started the show tonight, how many cops have committed suicide 40, this year?
41.
41
since
and we're in
January
March.
January 1, yeah.
Less than 3 months.
Yeah, it's 41.
So I have some, you know, some stats that I jotted down, and don't hold me to each number, but they're pretty accurate. And according to sources, that this is the third straight year that police suicides outnumber the line of duty deaths. So
yes,
that is insane. That is insane. I mean, that is sad. That's an epidemic, you know. And in 2018, just last year, surveys or reporting of 159 officers lost their lives to suicide.
And I do believe that this year, the number that we are at already, just as of March 4th, and that number, you know, 41 could have changed. I mean, it changes daily, but I do believe, unfortunately, we are already ahead of the game as far as
suicide. And I'll tell you, the homicides in law enforcement are not too far behind. But in 2017, it was amazing. It was a tie, 159 mm-hmm. reported committed suicide in 2017. In 2016, it was down 140. Mm-hmm. So now California, Florida, and New York and Texas have the highest rate of suicides. Now, the numbers of last year, there was 151 men and only 8 females who committed suicide, reports say. But in 2018, there was only 144 killed in the line of duty. Now, we're talking, it used to be where car crashes and law enforcement were surpassing gunfire. But now this year, in 18, it was like 60-something deaths at gunfire. And then in 2017, there was 129 law enforcement killed in the line of duty and 116. So as you see, the severe problem is in the suicides, cops taking their own lives, and it's sad. It's a sad situation. And they're saying that the average suicide, average, is age 41, and they're about 15 years or more on the job.
Well, I got a question for Doug. I mean, what drove you to that point where you put the gun to your head? What drove you to that point?
It was a totality of, that's a famous cop term, totality of circumstances.
I don't recall. That's another one. I don't recall.
I've said that in many IAs.
That means you don't feel like saying.
Yeah, I don't want to lie. So it was two things. So my entire life I've been an athlete. So I've always gone 100 miles an hour. And I was that same, so as an Ironman triathlete, hundreds of miles a week on my feet. And then the same thing at work. I brought the same thing to work. I never left early. You know, I was always early to work. I took lunch less than 10 times in my career. I was just gung-ho. And then all of a sudden, I got hurt at work. And I got hurt again. I got hurt again. And it ultimately having major back, broke my back. And so then I went to the couch. And we all know how it is, right? Nobody came to check on me. I was at home.
That's
I was
what
stuck
happens.
On a couch.
Well, they start out with this big outpour of support because that's what happened to me. Everybody wants to call you. Hey, check. But it doesn't continue. And then that's where it's like they have to get the initial phone call, say how you're doing and everything else. And then it stops, fades away.
I didn't even get that. So what I got was, because, I'm a surfer. So, man, any chance at the time, in that era, I was traveling a bunch, surfing, competing, right? And what I got was the phone call from work. Now, I'm not blasting my guys because I love them and they've saved my life and come to me. But this is what the norm was, and this is what they expected of me because I was wild.
Yeah.
Danny, I'm a lunatic out there.
Oh, I got a story, and I don't know who I told, but I got to tell them how I first met you, and we'll go into that after this because that was interesting.
So what I got was, hey, we were told, because here I'm on the couch. I can't move. Wheelchair and walker, right? Yeah, what's going on? We heard you were in Costa Rica surfing. And I'm like, jackass, I can't even wipe my own butt, okay? I'm not surfing nowhere. I'm at home. And then, it was like, holy crap, I've given my entire life.
Yeah.
I blew my knee out, had knee surgery on Wednesday. I came back to work the following Monday, never told anybody because I didn't want to catch grief because I'd been catching grief and ended up re-tearing it like a week later. And I'm sitting there going, holy crap, I've given you my entire life. I have been run over, hit by a car, used and abused, and you're sitting here giving me a hard time, saying that I'm faking and I'm just trying to get an easy vacation. So that was one of the impact, right? Yeah. Because there is people in the department who do that.
Oh, yeah.
And it broke my heart.
They classify everybody into that. If you're out for a period of time, you're milking it, you're just using time and that's bullshit.
So it was a little bit of that. The chief at the time was not supportive. He was giving me a hard time. And then obviously I watched my physical career, like my athletic career go in the toilet. I had great plans. I wanted to go to the world championships. I had been training And so all this, and then at the time I had a nightmare girlfriend. That's always a great catalyst, right? Mm-hmm. So I had a recent divorce. I had a nightmare girlfriend. I went from one nightmare to the next.
Wine,
nightmare.
Women, and song. A man's ruin.
Yeah, right? And are you giving me dirty looks, babe?
Nah,
she gave me the stink eye.
Yeah.
Like, easy little boy.
So what you're saying, it was layer after layer after
totality
layer
of things. Care. And so here's one thing I can explain to you, Ben. A doctor, her name's Amy Crawford. She's an amazing, she works out in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
She told me, she calls it the trauma box. So basically you have a filing system. This is how I understood it. So just so everybody knows on your show, I have no degrees. I'm a street soldier. And I can only tell people what I went through.
You're the best kind of cop.
That's what I try.
The uneducated ones, you know. And no. I'm not talking about bricks, but I mean, you're uneducated as far as, the new cops are educated with bachelor's degrees.
No,
you got to be a street cop. You're going to be. You can't get your criminal justice. Yeah, thunder and lightning.
Yeah. So anyway, so she told me about this trauma box, and it helped me understand it. So you basically have a filing cabinet in your brain, and every time that you experience some sort of trauma, it can be anything. It can be seeing a car crash. It can be at home, you know, a sick baby or whatever. Not necessarily in the cop world. But as law enforcement, that's what you – and firefighters, I believe they have it worse because everything they go to is something radical. Mm-hmm. You know, you as a cop, you could pull somebody over. That's not that big of a deal. So anyway, every time you hit some trauma, it basically is a piece of paper in the filing cabinet. For the average person, that filing cabinet will never fill up. Not saying they might not have one bad thing, but it's never going to fill up. And over time, you might just forget it. But for a cop – you see so much in a day and so much in a short amount of time that the filing cabinet fills up.
And that's cumulative?
Right.
Post-traumatic stress. That's what it comes
in. It's got nowhere to go. Yep. It's got, and you can't purge it. So the good thing with all that is there is help, and you can help it. But that's when it overflows, then the symptoms come out. Bad behavior, all the different
And that's where
things.
The family disruption comes in, and you know, sometimes people medicate themselves with alcohol, pills, and then it leads to the other topic that we touched on lightly because it's all together is suicide. But let me just tell real quick on how I met Doug Monda. I was working at the sheriff's office here, and this was years ago, and Doug was employed by Coco at the time, and that's when Doug was like the only guy I ever seen wearing a tactical vest, man. He had all his shit on the front, and he was like the only Coco cop that was, I guess, got away with it. I don't know. He was tacked out, man. I didn't know where – this guy looked like Rambo. So
I was known for this.
Yeah.
I was
everybody
the guy
knew him. I think you had a few street names that all the people called you on the street. You know,
yeah, yeah.
My sister called him RoboCop.
Yeah. But he was sharp, man. He was sharp. So Coco was looking for a male suspect who was a subject who was trying to commit suicide. So how the hell he wound up in Cape Canaveral? That's where the sewer meets the sea, by the way. And that's where all the shit winds up out in Cape Canaveral. And that's where this guy, I ended up finding this guy. And we were in the parking lot of a Dunkin' Donuts. So I called Coco and said, hey, I got your guy. I need you guys to come out here and, you know, evaluate him and see where he's going. So here comes this guy, comes up, and he was a badass looking dude, man. He was, you know, he was great shape, you know. He was put together well, you know, and he had, you know, all the fancy gear that we don't get to wear. And he was talking to the guy. So I'm listening to him, and he's telling the guy, yeah, man, you know, and we all as cops use tactics to get down to somebody's level. And Doug had mentioned to him, he says, yeah, man, I know how you're feeling, dude. He goes, because I tried to kill myself a while ago, and I'm going, what the fuck is he talking about? So and afterwards, I said, hey, dude, that was a great conversation, man. You got the guy to get down to your level. And he goes, well, I did try to kill myself. I said, holy shit. You know, usually we make up a story to get to their level. You know, hey, I know what you're feeling, man. I'm down and out, too. But, I mean, I heard that, and I was like, you got to be shitting me. And that's when Doug opened up to me and said, yeah, man, I tried to kill myself. And I thought of, you know, like Lethal Weapon, that, in the movie Lethal Weapon, you know, Mel Gibson. I mean, god dang, that guy was suffering from all kinds of stuff. And so that's how I met Doug. And ever since then, I was like, man, I tell that story a lot because it just sounds like it's believable to a cop that you would make up a story. And then to find out that it was actually true, I mean, you can't get any more raw than that with a person who's dealing. How else can, like I said before, the best way to understand somebody is to have dealt with what that person's dealing with. And that's with anything, man. You can't tell me if my mom died and you say, hey, well, my mom did die, and say, hey, I know how you're feeling. If your parent never died, you can only just sympathize with it. But you can't know how you're feeling. And for Doug to have somebody to say they tried to commit suicide, I've never tried it. I can't tell somebody I know how you feel. All I could do is evaluate them by the books, and then we throw them in the cuckoo house. But Doug, like I said, I have raw people on this show, man, that firsthand knowledge. And Doug, that was probably the most amazing interview I've ever heard and told to a subject. And to find out that it was true, I was like, whoa, holy shit, man, that was pretty epic. So I do tell people a lot of that story, and I tell them just currently, and that. That sounds like it's an unbelievable tale, but it's the God's honest truth. And so, Doug, also, you travel to, is it Utah? And who do you got sponsoring you out there? What do you got going on out there?
We have a couple of resources we use. One of them's in Utah. There's a great facility out there that we use. Texas, California. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of processing with a couple in Florida. And that's part of what we do, because unfortunately, just like anything else, so PTSD is obviously the buzzword in first responders. And now they're starting to use the word like the common flu.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's because you got people out there saying, oh, my God, I got PTSD because of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's bullcrap. We all know that. People like you, people like Vinny who suffer, I mean, it's real. I mean, Vinny and I have shared, I mean, the fact that the things that he's gone through, seen, and the fact that when he is upset or something's agitating him, he calls me or he texts me. Hey, man, to me, the fact that he reaches out to me.
You got to have that avenue, man, to release. If you don't have that, then it just culminates into worse and worse and worse. And that's probably where it caused, loss of friendships, loss of relationships, loss of, family and It's just, and then you hit rock bottom, and then they say there's nowhere to go else but up, but
There's always further to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. People say, listen, I've seen people, I've been in hell, and it gets further and farther. People, oh man, I've been at my rock bottom. And I tell you, it can always get worse. Just when you know what I mean? And I try to don't focus on that. You focus on being healthier and happier.
Yeah.
That's it. And what we were talking about before, some of the things we do is we go out and make sure. So to step back a minute, the process that I went through to get help was pretty horrible. And I had some key guys out there that happened to like my chief at the time, Mike Cantaloupe, John Blackledge. Remember John from Palm Bay?
He's a good guy, though, man. He's actually a reserve with the sheriff's office.
He's a big part of our foundation. He's my mentor. I don't really do a whole lot without talking to John first. And when I was going through this, I had reached out to him and I said, hey, John, I need some help. And this guy went bent over backwards to get me, because the first process was pretty bad. Like, they Baker acted me, put me in circles of care, and I was in there with every you-know-what that I put in there.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest, man, right? That's why he called it
the
cuckoo house.
And we were like, this is no place for a cop to go. It's almost like putting a cop in general population, if he gets a DUI or something, man. It's, it's not a bad thing, but he doesn't, you're putting him in with the bad thing. So anyway, through this process, the treatment center I went to was for drugs. So here's a drug cop, right? I'm a narcotics agent, and I'm going to a heroin drug treatment center. And so I walk in the room, there's 30 heroin addicts, and then there's me, the guy who just, is the freaking lunatic. But whatever transpired in there helped me. You know what I mean? I met some great people in there. I related to everybody, because it was the moment, because, as cops, everybody's a dirtbag. And what I realized is that guy's using drugs because he's got a problem, just like I do.
Right.
And so I was able to relate. So one of the things is we've gone out and what's the term? We've cycled through to find the best, because we were talking about with everybody with PTSD.
Right.
Everybody's got a treatment center. Everybody wants to help cops. They're coming to Florida. Hey, we got a conference. We can fix all your cops. And it's just all they care about is money.
Yeah, they charge heavily.
Yeah, so we just are weeding through that. We only bring the best in the nation that care about helping first responders. Mm-hmm. If you're, I put them through a test, If I smell BS, then I'm walking.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, we're go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say, though, I think it's important to say that our goal is not to put people in inpatient treatment. Our goal is to be proactive mm-hmm. and get out to departments and make those connections with first responders so that they reach out for help before they get to the point.
Do you help them also recognize the signs and symptoms? Yeah. I mean, are they receptive of it? I mean, are these agencies, I mean, you're going to them, you're preaching it. I mean, who else better to speak it than somebody like yourself?
They're very receptive. And you'll understand this. I'm being proactive instead of reactive.
Absolutely.
Which is what police departments do. They're always reactive. They wait for something tragic to happen, and then they're like, oh, crap, we need to clean this up.
Right.
So I'm trying to get these police departments to be, hey, you don't have to wait till they shoot themselves. You don't have to wait till they go into a drug or an alcohol.
Or they're barricaded in their house wondering why are they in there barricaded in their house. What's going on? Yeah.
Fix it first.
Yeah, we're nearing towards the end of our first show. Doug, real quick. What are you? Are you doing stuff? Are you still doing it? I remember you talked to me about certain days. You it sounds kind of manly, but you guys went and did painting
mm-hmm.
to help you and several other cops.
I go when I can.
Yeah.
One of the former.
Did you find that helpful?
Yeah, because you know it's something different.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what they're doing. You remember Kevin Fain?
Yeah.
So I go in there with Kevin.
Yeah.
We paint. We don't know what we're doing, but we just laugh at each other, right?
Yeah.
And it's just something different to break the monotony. It's usually all retired cops. And mm-hmm. the cool thing is we don't tell cop stories. We're in there laughing, having a good time and you know, breaking free. Little things like that. I tell everybody, do different stuff. Get out of that Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
If you like to fish, go fish. Do the things you used to do before you became a cop.
Don't do the easy way out and alcohol, drugs, and, you know, just things that'll just make it even worse. But, I mean, there's so much more we could talk about, and we're definitely going to have you back again, Doug. I'd love to have you back again for another show. This is a serious topic, people. I mean, it's an ongoing problem. It increases every year. It seems like it gets worse and worse until something is actually stetched into stone as far as, you know, we could maybe put disability on some of these officers that suffer from post-traumatic stress. And that's another topic we'll talk about, where it's today with the Congress, and where there have been incidents going to Capitol Hill. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. I want to thank Jason. I want to thank Karen and Doug for being here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you,
Vinny. And any final closing words?
Ladies first.
Thank you. I was just going to say we are a nonprofit. We function solely on contributions from the public.
And give your website.
It's www.survivefirst.us.
I think I'll put a link on it on my page. And if anybody wants to donate, it's nonprofit, so you can give them all they need. It's not going to be money to waste. I'll tell you that. Doug, final word.
My phone number is on the webpage, and I'm always available to talk to anybody if they're in need.
Jason?
My final thing, thank you, Doug, for all your service, military, and being a cop. My main thing is thank you for still serving people now.
My pleasure. I'm honored. Right.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I want to thank everybody for showing up on our show. We're going to have another show coming up. I'll post it on my page, but we're going to try to do Mondays. Next show, it's going to be, if I have something special coming up, I'll let you know. But if not, it's just going to be some crazy-ass antics between me and Jason. And we'll take questions and everything else, but it'll be funny. So thank you again. Have a safe night. And thanks for joining me on my podcast show, Vinny Marino Podcast, Space Coast Podcast. Nucks up, baby. Woo!